One wants to tell beloveds everything that's been waiting to be said. Some nights, a man needs flesh and blood and warm breath and a loving heart. Some nights, valor and cold purpose aren't enough. So Randall stripped on the wall and took Eagle's wing once more. Then he told Ishard what the Riddler said and flew back into Sanctuary. He landed in his eagle form on the doorstep of Shawmi, near the Promise of Heaven Park. There he dressed, using shrubs to make some modest clothes, a tunic and pantaloons, and knocked. And when the door opened, Merrycat, Shawmi's housemate, greeted him.
"Mary," said Randall and took the girl under his arm.
Merrycat had been Randall's apprentice long ago in Sanctuary's Mage Guild. She was Shawmi's closest friend. Randall knew she'd always loved him. But first she'd been his student, he her teacher. Then Pearbond had intervened. Tonight, Merrycat was the perfect comfort for a mage who wanted no carnal pleasure, only honest affection, and perhaps a little more. Merrycat looked into Randall's eyes solemnly, and her heart reached out to his. She knew just how to soothe him. She returned his hug and brought him inside. There she fixed him a cozy place to sit and something warm to drink since a storm was brewing. Both agreed. Such as Sanctuary had never seen. And eventually the love this girl had harbored for her mentor, so long denied, came out in a husky confession. She knew what he was. She knew what he wouldn't do. Randall's was a celibate order. So later, when they sat on her step together looking at the stars, they went venturing into fields of mind where few mortals ever go. The two mages, the thaumaturge and his best student, shared themselves there, their hopes, their fears, their burdens, and made their plans there to help and protect those they loved from whatever was coming in on the rising storm. Tonight Randall wants to forget for a while all about the Riddler and stealth and even about bringing Sime, the evening star, from Lemuria. Time enough for all of that tomorrow, he thinks. The universe forgives those who give until their hearts are aching and their spirits weak, and finds a way to renew all strength and cure all ills, in this world or the next, if a soul can just have faith. Just before sunrise, Tempest rode out on his favorite trouse, north of the barracks to where he'd made a pyre for a Barsis so long ago. Storm clouds massed in the distance, threatening rain. He slipped the gray horse's bridle over its ears and let it graze. This one would never desert him. Everything around was wild or ruined. There was no one to hear him, and no one to blame. He could say what he pleased to the storm god or to all the gods of heaven. He could curse or beat his chest or yell his rage at the sky. He didn't. He stood very still and waited to see if Enlil would come. In the distance, lightning was sheeting. It was a summer for storm and fury. That suited him. He had some of his own to add. When Tempest had intercepted Critias coming in from shambles to the barracks,
Crit had surrendered the third Mage Guild key on demand, explaining defensively,
"Sham, or someone of his, attacked Chorus, Arten, and Lysis with steps on throwing stars, coming down Runeway last night. They're not seriously hurt, but it's demoralizing, being attacked from shadows by an adversary you never see and can't engage. We think the wizard boy is hiding at, or in, the old Mage Guild now. We must hurry before Sham disappears again. I sent these keys ahead with Randall. We all agreed Shamshi is Nico's to dispatch, so he'll need the keys. It's time, Commander."
"When it's time isn't yours to say. It's mine. We're done here," he told Crit summarily, too outraged to say more to this intense fighter whose errors came from loyalty, not deceit.
"More attacks."
Not Crit's fault, however infuriating. But Crit trying to go around him straight to Nico with the keys. Crit setting battle tempo. That he wouldn't tolerate.
"Nico's to dispatch. If Nico can. When he can.
Certainly not yet. Not until Tempest finds some help for his partner, still intent on facing Shamshi, or vengeful destiny, alone." Tempest had fought too long and hard not to know the stench of oncoming doom when he smelled it. But this time he didn't know where to strike, or what to strike, or even how to strike against this insidious enemy, who thought to get at him through Nico. This opponent overestimated Tempest, judged him stronger and more canny than he was. The spear to his heart had taught him he was not invincible, not omnipotent, not almighty. Here today was just a man the god had immortalized and a horse, somewhat more than a horse should be, and a sky full of other gods above. All his stepsons felt the danger. They wanted to protect their commander. But from what? In times gone by, the god had always told him what he needed to know. But not now. Not today. He sat down where he thought he'd sent Abarsus up to heaven and looked out over the uplands and abandoned farms just beyond Sanctuary's northern reaches. Farther north than the eye could see were Ranky and Ticey and Wizard Wall. To the south was Sanctuary, broken away from a failing empire, trying to be a city-state on its own. He'd fought hard for each and every regime in its turn, before Nico came to the band, and after. Nico had been little older than Shamshi was today, when Ascalon had appeared in Sanctuary and given Stealth the dream-forged panoply, cuirass, dirk, short sword, and shield, whereon all the elder gods and demons played. Nico wore that panoply and carried those weapons through countless clashes with enemies mortal and immortal. Still carried them to this day. Sage and heather dot the hillside, spilling down toward the valley. And wild roses, white with yellow centers, climb where bees are busily at work. He doesn't recall any of these being here before. But he hasn't come up here since he'd sent Abarsus's soul to heaven. When Abarsus died, they'd been sacking the slaver's compound that became the barracks. After that, they'd sent their dead to heaven on flames from their own wood, from pyres made on their own ground. Soon enough, the band went north for the Wizard Wars. Nico was still so very young. Stealth carried scars from that conflict where a man least needs them. Until these strange days of Chironea and the Theban goddess who took those scars away. He and Nico had planned the Chironean sortie for its justice, to wheedle a bit of mercy from the gods, to save 23 pairs whose bodies would never lie beneath a granite lion for later men to find.
Where was the harm? Of those 23 pairs, only one pair was lost to them thereafter. A better record than most could claim, trying to save the fated dead. They'd given no thought to cheating the fates, if cheat them they had. As for the whispers in all their minds after Chironea Tempus had lived for ages with voices in his head.
Very quietly, though only the tros was near, he said aloud,
Enlil, hear me. I've asked for little, done a lot. This fighter of mine, this Nicodemus, is an avatar of yours, but too beset by ungodly forces to triumph on his own. Give him what you've given me, the strength, the fortitude, the flesh to match his will.
He waited for the god to answer. Far off, a fork of lightning pierced the sky. But overhead no storm clouds gathered. Where he sat, no rain or wind whipped him. It was sunny. It was dry. From behind him came a voice. Why do you ask the storm god in that boy's behalf? He's mine, you know. He knew who spoke. Before he could turn to face the sound, so he didn't turn. He'd known, when Harmony started to speak, just what she would say. So he didn't answer. He sat very still to see what the goddess would do. His weapons were on his horse. They'd done for gods before. But weapons were not the answer today. She came closer, barefoot, with lavender linen rustling round her ankles. She sat beside him. Speak up, Riddler, for him or for yourself.
I need help for him. I'll give my life if that's the answer. If I can trade it to keep him safe.
Safe for how long? He could see her out of the corner of his eye, her proud profile, her full lips, her body that his stepson couldn't resist. For as long as I would live, otherwise. For eternity, Riddler? You want immortality for your stealth, called Nicodemus? He took a chance, a breath, then said,
Don't you?
Harmony laughed like a stream over rocks, like a bird in a tree on a fine spring day.
You arrogant creature! What gives you the right to petition such a thing?
Not who, what. What he is, and what I am, and what we've sworn to one another. These give me the right. What would the world be without him, and those like him? I have the right to ask.
It's not up to you, she said.
But is it up to you?
He asked.
The goddess stood up. He stood up. On her feet, Harmony was nearly as tall as he. He saw the tros horse, uncanny beast staring with its pricked ears, every muscle bunched. His horse sensed how dire was this circumstance. This quiet meeting on a hilltop whence the original stepson had gone to heaven, unmarked and unremarked by any but him. She stared down at feral fields, abandoned farms, wild horses and deer running free. He loves the world so much. I agree it would be a shame to take that love away from meadow and tree, stream and sky and all that lives in nature, and leave them lonely.
My thought exactly, he said, although it hadn't been, going very carefully. This was not only a goddess of love, but a goddess of war, of order and balance and justice. Make an enemy of her, and what was difficult could become impossible.
He belongs to you and your storm god, he thinks.
He, of all men, belongs to himself, Tempest said honestly.
And that honesty turned her face to him. Eyes wider than the heavens weighed him and blinked.
I cannot give what he will not ask for or accept. How would it be then? How was it for you when you took on curse and God?
I got used to it. I lived to fight on other days.
Wanting neither too much to live, nor too much to die. I have given him all he asked for. I should not, perhaps cannot, do more.
And if we lose him?
He will not be lost to me, whatever happens.
Anger roared up from his bowels and caught in his throat.
Gods and goddesses all alike.
With every iota of discipline he had, he sought composure.
So, you will leave him to fight alone?
He has you.
By my oath and ours and all of mine, he has me.
The sacred band of stepsons and all your Thebans. But you know as well as I, no man will prevail in unfair battle. Fine, then. He and I will face whatever is in store. You don't mind if I tell him what you've said? Perhaps the storm god will do better for him.
But she was gone by then. Dissolved into flax on the wind. In Tempest's belt pouch, when he went to get his horse, the three keys to the Mage Guild clinked. As he swung up onto the trace, a voice in his skull said,
Art thou finished, Avatar, pleading with a foreign goddess instead of begging? My majesty to aid one of my own?
Its reverberations, so loud, made him dizzy astride his horse. So the storm god of heaven was present and accounted for, after all. And after the inconclusive way his meeting with Harmony had gone, Tempest was more relieved than he could ever let Enlil suspect. The god was waxing jealous, even proprietary, where Nico was concerned. Thus began the haggling over Nicodemus, which was difficult, since Tempest was trying to offer Enlil a soul that, by rights and oath bond, the god already had. But he must do something. Nico is his greatest vulnerability, perhaps his only one. End of chapter 35. Chapter 36. Grace of the Goddess. The three keys to the Mage Guild were in Nico's pocket, seated him by his left side leader. They weighed on him like lead as he and Tempest rode through the city while rain poured down and thunder thrashed the air. They put their two trough studs in the stable behind the mercenaries' hostel, out of the downpour, and went indoors, to sit drinking possets by the fire in the Rufus common room. And they were welcome there. Men drifted in by ones and twos and fours, hoping to approach them. Eager fighters who'd heard about the downwind's sweep, wondering what was in the offing, looking for glory and tales to tell. Wolfish mercenaries studied claret walls hung with antique weapons. They'd glance at Tempest and Nico and then away. Sellswords lounged at a polite distance, talking together before they approached the guildmaster to ask about the stepson's commander. They'd fill their bowls with watered wine, add wheat and cheese or nuts and honey, and eat, biding their time, calm and predatory. It never pays to be too anxious to sell yourself or your sword. The quiet in the common room made Nico's ears ache as unknown mercenaries appraised the two of them at their corner table again and again. These were calculating men, looking for hire. Some wore their most storied gear, complete with unit devices and decorations won in conflicts known throughout the land. They'd heard the tales. They wanted to see the spectre. Tempest in his leopard skin and boar's tooth helm, readying a new cohort, preparing a contingent for some unspecified operation. And soon enough, off to war. Nico had been one of those men once, a right man whose leader wanted to serve under Tempest, come down from Ranky looking for adventure and spoils. A last campaign together, his partner had said, before the older fighter took a wife, raised a family, put in a crop of wheat. And his left side leader had died here, in an explosion down by the docks, leaving him devastated and alone. Up they came, these fit, harsh men, professionally reserved, asking to meet, wanting to sit, hoping for hire. Some of these fighters were younger than Nico was when first he came here. Some older than Stratton or Karen now. Some showed their scars, some didn't. They'd say, "Heard you're hiring for the stepsons." Tempest would say, "If you're good enough." Lips would quirk, legs stretch out, bodies lean back, slouched with both hands on the table or in their belts. Exposed bellies and hearts and throats, saying all that needed to be said about courage and skill. "What's the mission? How long? Where?" And Tempest would say, "The battle of your dreams." They hired a dozen on the spot and sent them out to the barracks to see Sink and get fit up. Reinforcements for whatever Tempest thought was coming. Then they went to Mark's weapon shop and ordered armaments. Iron-tipped short flights and bolts, longer quarrels and barb-pointed arrows, crossbows and cavalry bows of sinew composite, short medium and long spears, javelins, dories, and sarissas butted with bronze and tipped with iron, daggers and short swords, curved and straight, banderin throwing stars by the case, and armor, cuirasses of bronze and leather and linen, linothoraxes, scale corselets, mail shirts, bronze-faced shields of wood or wicker with leather armbands and cord handholds, helmets, some with horsehair crests, arm guards and bracers, greaves and boots and sandals, enough to fight a long campaign. All day the Riddler had been fey, preoccupied, secretive, as if the god was whispering in his ear, leaving Nico to sort out men and weaponry. Out in back of Mark's, the practice range was still there. Straw-stuffed cuirasses, torsos, and oxhide targets were strategically arranged against a tall wooden wall atop a berm. Nico wanted to try the new high-torque composite crossbow with its rope springs. It shot farther in the rain, knocked more bolts quicker, penetrated deeper than other crossbows could. When he'd come back with it, Tempest and Mark were waiting. Tempest leaned back against the shop's wall, weapons hanging all around him. Raindrops still stippled his mantle. Mark had aged. His pulchritudinous blonde wife had died. His rough complexion was rougher. His thick black hair was shot with gray, his hairline higher. Mark said,
"Your commander says you need a whole new kit, Stealth. I have some special arms and armor."
Nico's summer duty gear was plain and worn, but he didn't want any changes to his war panoply with battle in the offing. "Commander?" He looked at Tempest, who said, "No dream-forged arms or armor, none of it. Nothing given us by Ascalon. Go downstairs with Mark and find what suits you. If it's not here, we'll have it made. When we can drive it down here, Mark will take the chariot in trade as well." The ground seemed to lurch under Nico's feet. Not until then had he realized how serious Tempest judged Ascalon's involvement to be. Talk is talk, especially encamped, with no warfare looming. Men make much of little, but this. He'd used that dream-forged panoply for a decade, maybe more. His head spun. Tempest really thought Ascalon was taking sides, and not their side.
"I don't have any of it with me," stating the obvious.
"The Sacred Band's credit's fine. I know that panoply of yours as well as you do. I can sell it before sundown, sight unseen. Why you don't want it, that's not my business."
"You're right, it's not," Nico said, and went with Mark to try to replace the irreplaceable. He found pieces and parts. A cuirass of quality must be measured to a body custom-made to flex and give. A sword such as his dream-forged one was unobtainable at any price. Eventually, among the best gear downstairs, he found a western short sword forged by a Bandaran hand from the way the exotic metal was folded, and the tang was set. It had a leather-wrapped hilt, and its length and balance were nearly perfect. When he'd finished, Tempus was leaning in the doorway, watching him. Time to go, Stealth. Mark's sturdy legs pumped as he accompanied them up the stairs and out to their wet horses, standing in the mud with their tails to the wind.
10 days, best I can do for Stealth's carass and the rest.
That's fine, Tempus told Mark, and they rode out of there without another word to the weaponer. In 10 days, what they'd get could never replace what Nika was giving up. He kneed his tros closer to Tempus's as they headed across downwind.
Why?
He asked Tempus.
You know why. You can't trust that panoply from now on. You can't trust the hand that made it. I can't. We don't need his chariot, and we don't need his weapons.
Tempus had God-given weapons, older than Nika was. But arguing with the commander would be fruitless, especially since Tempus was right. Nika used that dream-forged panoply sparingly because Ascalon had made it. Only for the direst of circumstance, or ceremonially. He'd tried a dozen times to lose it, throw it on a pyre, or bury it. It always ended up back in his hands. They rode in silence for too long. You couldn't see the angle of the sun. The sky was dark gray and grayer, like wet slates. Just before they turned into the street of Arcana, the others began arriving at the appointed rendezvous. First to join them were Crit on his white-faced chestnut and Strat on his ghost horse. Crit fell in on Nico's right, Strat to his right. Jihan took her position on Tempus's left, on her tros mare. Behind them came Thebans, right to left, Arceus and Aegis, both on stepson bays, Gorgias on Nico's black colt, Perseus and Simeus on a sorrel and the big dun. Each of the second rank had crossbows, lances, shields, and long horsehair ropes coiled on their saddles. The precision of the ranks made him proud. No horse or rider misbehaved. All knew their places, all knew their jobs. 5 abreast, they trotted up the street of Arcana as, behind, the third rank closed up. Chorus on the far right, Artan next, then Lysis in the middle, then Charon with Cassander on his left. The street of Arcana was longer than Nico remembered it. Its trees were taller, bending lower over the road, shedding rain that fell on the band in streams as wind shook the branches. Rainwater puddled across the road so that horses stepped with care. But no horse jumps a puddle or bites or calls. No rider curses or talks. Everyone knows the plan, or did know it until the Mage Guild came into view. Ablaze with lights far down at Arcana's end. How many were in there, where no one was supposed to be? Lysis, Artan, and Chorus had come here and left unharmed, then were punished for their temerity with a shower of throwing stars, party favors from an enemy they couldn't see.
Commander, Nico asks.
Straight in, Nico. All the way to Meridian if we can, says the Riddler, and draws his God-given sword. It's tinged with a ruddy glow, the sword's reaction to unnatural opposition. Sorcerers, gods, demons, or worse.
Tempus holds his short sword high for a moment, a signal for all, a warning to veterans, who know the tinge on that blade means infernal or supernal enemies are near.
Look close about you.
Then the Riddler brings his sword down sharply. 15 horses break into a canter, each keeping distance and spacing on the slippery wet cobbles, each far enough from the other that no man's weapon will pose a threat to the fighter next to him. Mounted, a shield-holding line can still drift right. Drills and skills prevent it. If it happens in these close quarters, where bushes line the street, obscuring iron fences on either side, real problems will arise. Horses thunder down the street of Arcana, weapons clank and crossbows crank. Metal jingles, swords gleam, snorts mask, cadence. Leather slaps, hoofs splash in puddles. All are perfect by the book. Even the 3 young stepsons in the 3rd rank are where they should be, holding steady, keeping pace. Nico can hear a flap of wings above, he thinks. Ishard, keeping watch through the trees among the rain squalls, mist and clouds. Mist is moving in now, as if it is alive, straight toward them through the rain. Veterans look at it askance. Ascalon had once unleashed a killing mist in Sanctuary. Mist like this had crawled these streets once before, shredding limbs and leaving flayed carcasses frozen where they fell. This uncanny mist and rain unnerves the horses and the fighters. Riding through your fear is part of the mission today. Even without his helmet, Nico's breathing sounds too loud. He slides his oldest short sword, service-worn and plain, out of his scabbard. Crit, beside him, watches Nico too much. Anxious for a skirmish, pulling on their bits, war horses toss froth on everyone and everything. On they canter, but the Mage Guild gets no closer. They ride under the trees and out of the rain, deeper into the arcane mist. Fetlock high, knee high, foreleg high, barrel high. Nico feels the cold mist lapping around his feet, his calves, his knees. He is careful where his hands are. This chilling mist in summer is Ascalon's doing without a doubt. Wind whistling catches up the mist and slaps them with it. When it touches Nico's face, it stings, making his eyes burn and tear. He can no longer see the lights of the Mage Guild. There's nothing ahead, nothing behind, just pearly mist, crawling up the bushes into the trees. He wishes he'd worn his helmet, but he wanted to see everything, hear everything. He has a short sword in one hand, reins in the other. From the feel of his troce, if he slacks his reins to put on his helmet, this horse will bolt, trying to find a way through the unnatural mist and out of it. Nico knows how bad this kind of sortie can get. A battle without a visible opponent, no clash of skills, no test of valor, just an opaque mist, impossible to fight. Killing all the horses and men, pulling everyone down on the road to die. He chances a look to his right, at Crit in the flat, shadowless light, at Stratton beside him, both helmeted, steady in their saddles. He looks to his left, where the Riddler rides, face unreadable under that boar's tooth helm, dragging his sword point through the mist as if trolling for fish. Wherever the commander's short sword drags, the icy mist turns dark and curls away. Their mounts sound louder than he's ever heard them, laboring but plunging on. He wants to call a halt, or charge, or retreat and regroup. If it were his mission, he would have. Get the horses and riders out of the mist. Or through it, before it drops down on them from above and men lose hearts and souls. Commander, he calls softly, leaning left in his saddle, hoping Tempest can hear him above the hoofbeats and the clank of armor. Through the boar's tooth helmet. Let's run through it, or back out of it, or... The stepsons have no maneuver codes for maybe or what if. Nico can call an order to charge or halt or retreat, but his left side leader is right here. Before Tempest can respond, a lone figure appears, riding toward them down the middle of the road from the direction of the Mage Guild. And behind that horse and rider there is no mist now, just a clear street and a patch of unaccountable sunshine. Beyond, the Mage Guild squats, smug but dark once more in the afternoon light. The lone horse and rider keep coming, single footing, no menace, no weapon showing but one long spear with a pennant tied to its butt, snapping in the wind. A makeshift standard for an undeclared war. This horse approaching is as good as any of theirs. Black as night, with gold dapples, big-chested, big-crested, big-boned, moving squarely with effortless impulsion, fixing them with proud and fiery eyes. On come the horse and rider. Back scurries the mist as if lifting up its skirts. Then the rider pulls up the big black and halts, one hand on thigh. Black armor, black and gold helmet, crested with red horsehair blowing in the wind, almond-eyed, nothing to be seen within. Only a flash of pale lips and chin showing through a vertical slit. The rider waits for them. The horse stands still as a statue. The mist in the bushes and the trees hisses as it shrinks back. The sound is eerie. When they're almost close enough to call to one another, the black-armored rider raises its fist with the standard in it, and casts that spear with its pennant straight at them. The spear flies through the air in a silence that seems to stop every horse, though each is moving, and every rider's sound. Breaking formation, Nico reins his horse halfway around, raising it up and pushing it sideways, his legs and hands demanding, forcing it across and in front of Tempest and his mount, covering their bodies with his horse and his body. His shield angles high to protect his partner as the spear arcs up and down, not again, not ever again. Both Tros horses squeal angrily, bumping one another, biting. The standard strikes a few lengths short of them, its spear point driving deep between the cobbles. The shaft quivers there as he rolls his horse back into place on the Riddler's right. Who is this sole rider challenging them? Shamshi's panoply, when last Nico fought him, was very different from this fighter's gear. Nico has never seen the Dream Lord ride to battle except by chariot. So it can't be him in that black armor, can it? There is stirring in the ranks behind him. He hears Karen whisper something unintelligible to his son. At that moment, Tempest raises his sword. Halt. Everybody stops. Horses bugle and stomp. There's no chilling mist now. Not even around their horses' ankles. It's back in the bushes or hiding in the leaves or curled like snakes around the boughs overhead. The black horse walks forward. Beyond the horse and rider, not near, not far, or both, or neither, the Mage Guild wavers. Now it is dark, shuttered. Now it is lit, every window blazing. Tempest says, "Nico, now!" Tempest and Nico ride forward alone, as behind them, Crit closes up the rank. They walk their mounts slowly, neither brandishing a sword toward the spear with its pennant, black and red, gold and white, flapping in the rising wind. The armored rider on the black horse comes closer now, curved short sword in hand. Sunlight breaks through the cloud and rays down around horse and rider. The rain has stopped, or is held in abeyance. A few drops splatter from the pergola overhead. Nico hears too loudly every rustle of leaves, every breath he takes, every clop of his horse's hooves. Between his legs he can feel his mount's heart pound as it struggles to walk when it wants to run. They reach the standard. Tempest on the left of it, Nico on the right, before the other rider does. His commander motions with the sword in his right hand and says, "Nico, pull up that standard and cast it down." Nico tries to do as he's told, reaching with his shield arm, his rein hand. To his rear, he can hear the stepsons on their horses, 13 men and mounts. Riders shifting in their saddles, taking better hold of their weapons, horses champing at their bits and snorting. But he can't grab the spear on which the pennant whips in the wind, not without moving closer, not without letting go of his reins. So he says, because it's important, because Tempest needs him to make this symbolic gesture, "I'll get closer," and knees his horse left. He grabs the standard's shaft, that long spear stuck into the street, and tugs and pulls while the armored rider on the black horse continues its measured approach. But the spear point won't come out of the road. It's in too deep. He's not wearing his helmet. The pennant snaps in a gust of wind and nearly slaps him in the face. "I'll have to dismount to free it, Commander." Tempest is watching the black armored rider narrowly. Eye whites gleam within that boar's tooth helm. "Never mind. Leave it." After one more yank, he lets go of the shaft. He needs both hands for whatever's coming. The other rider stops before them. The big black horse has a golden muzzle. It stares at them as brazenly as any soldier and chews its bit. "Why would you pull up my standard?" asks the rider. "Rather get off your horses and bow your heads. Or kiss my pennant and ride on by to glory, brave fighters." Then the helmeted head turns to Nico. "All but you. You stay." What's this? He can't move. He's rooted to the spot. A heartbeat overwhelms him. The next one comes infinitely slowly. Then another pounds against his brain. Is this Shamshi?
the Dream Lord himself, or some other enemy? Is this where it will be? How it will go? A final confrontation in the middle of the Mage Guild street?
Beside him, Tempest slowly turns his head and stares at him for what seems like forever. Then the commander raises his sword without a word, pointing it forward, motioning to his left. Go around. Go on by. Obedient, Crit calls a maneuver code. The Riddler leads the stepsons on. The squadron moves along, their horses walking single file to funnel past Nico. Some Thebans reach out to touch the pennant with their fingers or brush their lips against it as they go. Charon, Lysis, Gorgias, Aegis, and Perses. Superstitious, or hedging their bets. No one looks at Nico, not even Critias or Stratton, not Jihan. The Riddler has made his decision. Only Nico's horse objects, neighing loudly as it's left behind. His horse wants to go with Tempest's, and cannot. The last stepsons ride slowly by him, looking neither right nor left, but ride they do. Past him and on toward the Mage Guild they go, leaving him behind with this armored apparition confronting him in the street. He watches his sacred band ride into the patch of sunlight and onward, horses' rumps swaying, tails swishing. He shifts his grip on his short sword and flexes his shield arm, his wrist shaking slack rein through his fingers. Ready when you are, Sham, or whomever. The opposing rider sheathes the curved short sword. He sheathes his straight one. The rider on the black horse says, "What's fair in love is fair in war. Why so solemn? You'll live to fight another day. That's what your commander wants for you." Harmony? Goddess of balance in love and war. If it is harmony in that black armor, he's misunderstood this whole encounter. But she's not like this. She's beautiful and gentle and kind. If this is the goddess, he's probably the only one who has misconstrued. And misconstruing, let his commander ride on with the 13 other stepsons. He should have gone. He should have ridden on by. But that voice had bid him stay. He hadn't recognized the timbre yet. There was a hold on him he couldn't break. He wants to say, "Is that really you? Or is it Sham skewing his perceptions, making him weak to strike him down?" On Mage Guild ground, nothing can be trusted. He says, "Harmony, if it's you, I have to go." "No," says the rider, as if disciplining an unruly horse. "You stay here a little longer. If you go now, you die now. Right here. Right now. Today." The big horse paws the ground. "Your band was an odd number. Imbalanced. 15. Now they're 14. Much better." Now he's sure it's harmony. He nearly claps his mount into a run, but he doesn't dare. "And what about them? The killing mist? The threat they face? What have you done?" "You think their fates are up to you? You'll save them all, will you?" "The mist won't be killing anyone, not you, or yours, or mine, today. They'll be fine without you there. It's not a trap for them now. It was a trap for you. Now the rider takes off that helmet, and long amber hair spills out. Those wide eyes take his measure. Again. You may go, now, says Harmony, and her horse walks forward until she can put her own gloved hand on the standard stuck in the Mage Guild street. Her fingers curl around it. Your commander asked me to help you. Did he tell you? No. He's embarrassed. He should go. He should be with his left side leader. He wipes his sword hand on his thigh. His palms are sweaty. He's not sure if he believes her. She's a goddess. All deities are tricksters, twisting lives and hopes to their own ends. I have to go. I have to help him. If you want to help someone, help him. He says the same of you, she tells him. Then the standard goes away, as the magnificent horse goes away, and the goddess with her honey-colored hair goes away. And he kicks his horse and runs it all the way to the Mage Guild, farther away than it could possibly be from here to there, frightened of what he'll find. But when he gets there, the sacred band's ropes are on the Mage Guild gates, and archers with crossbows are shooting out windows. Windows they'd already shot out, according to Critias, once before. And no traces of the mist remain. Tempest, safe and sound astride his trousers, hacking away with his short sword at the lock on the Mage Guild gates. The sword is glowing hot, but the lock doesn't break. The lock sparks blue, gleaming with wards. Jian, beside him, touches the gates to freeze the metal, make it brittle. The lock doesn't crumble. They try the sword again. No combined force avails them. The lock still holds. Nico's horse comes around the corner just as Tempest reins his mount away from the gates, toward Crit. The commander sees Nico and signals him to approach them with a motion of his God-given sword that has won so many days. But not this day. Nico heads that way. Stratton, crossbow ready, and his bay forsake the bushes by the side of the road.
Glad you could join us, Stealth, says Strat, riding up beside him. I'd tread softly, were I you, right now. We can't get in there. Commander's not thrilled with how this mission's playing out, Strat cautions.
I still have the keys. I was detained.
Tell it to the Riddler. Strat snorts and spits over his shoulder. That's your little dancing girl, the thieving goddess on her big black horse.
Nico says, Strat. He won't apologize, not for staying behind, not for the pennant, not for Harmony or anything she's done here. But he must say something.
That's her, my dancing girl, on the big horse.
As he and Strat ride up to Tempest and Critias, Crit pulls off his helmet and calls out,
Stealth, before I kiss that goddess's pennant, you can hug my crack. And you can tell her I said so.
Black look aimed Nico's way.
Ready now, Nico? Keys? This isn't over yet, the Riddler says.
Ready.
Ready to go in there. Ready with the keys. Ready for whatever trap awaits or remains.
He remembers what the goddess said, but he can't say such things to Tempest. And yet he must tell Tempest what his commander needs to know.
Commander, she said the mist won't trouble us again today.
Nika reports. He shrugs. If there's still a trap in the Mage Guild meant just for him, if the band is in danger because of him, if the balance is restored,